She was the founder of Womankind, an integrated model for a 24-hour health response to intimate partner violence, although she's presenting, I think, on something a little bit different today.
A lot of it different.
Thank you.
As some of you know, I get a little antsy when I have to sit still. And these were really good presentations, but I did get a little antsy. This is actually from my dissertation. Thank God there was one. It took a long, long time, but I completed it. I'm not sure why I was in this group. I'm not working with immigrants. My people mostly are in the United States, and frankly, they're all deceased when you look at this. Working definition, you probably don't even need. The greatest danger is precisely when the woman is leaving or has left. Two hypotheses. Media does not accurately describe what takes place within intimate relationships that end in homicide-suicide. And the geographic distribution of IPV homicide-suicides are pretty much corresponding with the population area. And I'll show you a picture of the 20. I took all of these cases from 2012. There were over 500 homicide suicides across the country in 2012. I just read this morning that the Violence Policy Center out of D.C. reported 1,400. So I thought, I tried to get as many as I could, but clearly we missed a few. And 1,400 homicide suicides, excuse me. So, coding, location analysis, we used two different types of software. It was really slick. In the old days, I can remember when I started this work, taking the scissors and clipping the copy out of a little newspaper, and then taping it onto a white sheet of paper so they were all on consistent paper. This digitized reporting is so slick. It really facilitated gathering data. The other part that facilitated were the two interns I had helping me a lot. Lexamancer is a software program out of Australia. By the way, Esri is downstairs here. You can stop in and talk with him. I didn't see any kiosk or booth from Lexamancer. Concept maps were generated and Lexamancer graphs were generated. Content analysis performed using Lex analyzes the content from digitized media reports. Automatic content analysis. I can't tell you how slick it was. We did keyword searching by discovering, then extracting thesaurus-based concepts from the text data. This is what is a typical graph, if you will, from Lexamancer for 4 months, January, April, July, and October. You can be sure I have this for all 12 months. If you'd like to see it, I'd be more than happy to send my dissertation. But if you look at this, the center bubble, follow the lines down and you go to shooting. Everything else is related to that shooting. Incident on the right, family, couple, bodies, died, and at the bottom is the children. There was no one who is not affected by a homicide-suicide. Location analytics, cluster sampling. The total population of clusters is divided into three groups, and a simple random sample of the groups is selected. The process of defining a homicide-suicide cluster is difficult. Limited reporting, focused primarily on demographics, located in the last page of the media, of the newspaper, a small paragraph. And I know when it bleeds, it leads, is what we're used to hearing, but this has become so commonplace that, you know, page 8 on the back, or always below the crease. Anyway, we'll get to some statistics. Coding data is data was gathered and coded. One trained abstractor, I'm going to move you there, to avoid inter-rater reliability. Data was reviewed for coding accuracy by two researchers. Content analysis identified main themes, concepts, and beliefs reported in the media. Esri is pretty slick, too. Lex is my favorite, but Esri mapped visualizations. Esri is really much more used in crime mapping. If you look at crime mapping, like if I was a supervisor in a police, you know, in the police department, I would want to know where most of the incidents occur so I could have officers assigned to that area. And that's where Esri is used a lot. Map filtering, proximity, custom area, base maps, imagery, demographics, consumer, and lifestyle data. We also found that Esri is used for marketing purposes, and you can see where it would be very useful there. Here is a ranked concept list from Esri. Now, where do you see domestic on that list? You don't. I've started, and if this is, you know, who has time to do this, but I've started calling reporters who report on cases like this in my metropolitan area. They don't use the term domestic violence. And yet domestic violence is at the very base of every one of these incidents. Partly I think that we need to have the terminology there so we can educate the public that this is domestic violence. Yes, it's an intimate partner. This isn't even a son killing parents or a daughter killing her children. This is intimate partner, so it's a restricted area within family violence. But nowhere on there is the term domestic. Domestic was not commented on directly. The term domestic didn't appear until page 2 at count 135, 19% relevance. So it clearly was not an important consideration. And yet it's at the very core of every single one of these deaths. It's a pretty rare event, ironically, even though now 1,400 cases across the United States. Quality and accuracy of the media coverage is suspect, geographic distribution of the dyads, and we used Esri. Now, I put in a couple of gender theory issues here. Michael Johnson's work on gender theory is significant and awesome. Traditional gender attitudes legitimize men's control over their women. And you probably know the four categories. Intimate terrorism is what we're talking about here. Situational couple violence is not qualify for intimate terrorism. When you're reading about a homicide-suicide, you know that's the worst it can get. Characterized by higher scores on misogynistic, yes, compared to both nonviolent husbands and those involved in situational couple violence. My thought on situational is literally any one of us can abuse a partner, male or female. We can do that by physical means, we can do it by verbal means. That is not the same as battering. Battering is what we're seeing here. It's a compilation, a complex grouping of multiple ways of attacking and affecting your partner. Evan Stark, a good buddy, has talked about the coercive control model, and I love it. I think it is far more representative of what's happening within intimate partner violence. And Evan answers why these relationships endure, why abused women develop a profile of medical and mental health problems seen among no other group of assault victims, and why the legal system has failed. Coercive control is really not seen in the legal system, except it's seen all the time. Susan Schechter, Stark and Flitcraft contended, intimate partner violence is firmly embedded in the gendered issues of power and control, a pattern of behavior that not just physically controls someone or emotionally or verbally controls someone, but takes away the victim's liberty or freedom and strips away their sense of self. It's not just the woman's bodily integrity which is violated, it's a human rights issue. And I think if we can get looking at this issue as a human rights issue, we may be able to make more progress on prosecution. It highlights what is significant. It is control. It's not, I see all of these definitions for physical intimate partner violence. It's still control. It's still using one more means or multiple means to control your partner. Stephen Hassan is another favorite if you wanted to read something interesting. He's written a series. That Cult Mind Control was the first work that I read by him. He's got several more now. The picture is simple, and you all know what that picture is. The greatest threat is from someone they know or love, and it's usually a spouse or intimate partner. And wait till you see the graph I have on the weapons that were used. We had to do a little looking into, okay, if it's done so poorly now, how do we get it better? I think journalists are trying. The difficult part is journalists are now almost entirely under deadline. They have to get, you know, visit a site, get a report out, probably back to their carrier, their media site, within a few hours. And that's not the only case they work on in a day's time. They often view the people standing around the driveway, bystanders and neighbors who are the most successful and the least knowledgeable of what has taken place. Sources shape the story. Most of the ones used by journalists today don't have working knowledge. The people in this room are the ones that should be interviewed. Domestic violence experts, trained police, specialists, and survivors. Using the three C's is a useful way to look at this. Is it current? Is there conflict? Is it controversial? Unless reporter and editorial staff are educated about domestic violence, this reporting won't change. You find it's almost entirely demographics. Name, location, married, unmarried, kids, that's what you see in this reporting. We looked at the following questions, and you can think about this at another time. Who's quoted? What's the reaction of the neighbors? When I first looked at this dissertation, the reaction of the neighbors is, well, you know, he was just playing t-ball with his kids in the afternoon on Sunday and killed them all on Tuesday. There is a huge disconnect here. I hate the term much have snapped. These men and some women are not snapping. This is an existing, changing, growing pattern of power and control. And there's almost never a byline. Because I usually call the people when I find out the report, when I find out who wrote it. And it's a teachable moment. If you look closely, in each case, domestic violence was the immediate or the related cause. And it's not just the two participants. She didn't participate. Even in an elderly population, most weren't asked if they wanted to be murdered by their partner and then he would murder himself. And so be very careful with an elderly population of what you're seeing. It's not about choice. The research over and over and over confirms that firearms, guns, specifically handguns, play a vital role. There is a law in place in many, many states to disarm domestic violence offenders, but it's poorly implemented. And the victim is not informed when the abuser's firearms were surrendered or confiscated. she doesn't even know the law. So we're talking a level of awareness that needs to change. If she knew that the abuser had to turn in his weapons, 3 or 4 or 5 or 10, she'd be probably far more comfortable. Johns Hopkins just finished this research project. Most women assumed the judge would ensure that the guns were removed from the abuser. Baloney. It just doesn't happen. So if someone goes in and she says, you know, he's got weapons, they may go in and take a weapon, but he has all kinds of weapons that they don't know about. So their implementation is a difficult, difficult concern. The Violence Policy Center puts out a report, multiple reports every year. They're called American Roulette, and they're great reporting on the homicides and homicide-suicides across our country. Now, what do you suppose the big blue part is? It's firearms. It's looking at what weapon of choice is used. I don't know how we're going to change our gun laws in this country, but I do know that they have to be changed. That's the intimate partner homicide suicides for the United States in 2012. Now, it does follow the geographical areas of where the population is. I'm dying to know what they were in Minnesota, which is where I'm from, and yes, I checked. I still think we missed some in Minnesota. So this is what Lexamancer produces for you, and I, of course, have every single month tallied. Now, we talk to kids about how to get out of a house when the house is burning down, and don't talk to strangers, because you never know what those strangers can do. I think it's much more likely that you can help a kid in advance when they're confronted or threatened with a violent act at home. Because most kids will run to a closet, close the door, you know, shiver forever, and the impact of that trauma is long-lasting. Now, there's still going to be an impact, but wouldn't she feel better or he feel better if they could take some action like running to a neighbor or calling 911? It might lessen their anxiety and their fear, and maybe even increase their understanding of what on earth is going on. Many, 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 many recommendations. There's no national database on homicide suicides. The best we have, thankfully, is the Violence Policy Center in D.C., and that's not a national database. We need fundings. And development, homicide, suicide is not a solitary event. Everyone is affected. If both parents are killed, the kid is parentless. The neighbors are affected, the friends, the relatives. Dr. Laurie Post looks at collateral killing. Who else does the murderer kill besides his partner? Access to a firearm is key. Thank you very, very much.
So we are right at 10 o'clock, but I do want to allow time for one or two questions if you guys are willing to indulge. I
have a quick one for Dr. Dowd. You mentioned in Canada, 67 women were murdered. I'm curious, what was the cause of death, since they are not as, they don't have as many gun or firearm deaths? And again, just being 67, versus the thousands in the U.S., what is the primary?
You mean how they were?
What is the primary cause of the?
I have to look into that, but I think they could be murdered with different.
Unforced trauma, yeah, or four illegal guns that maybe they got in the U.S.
Yeah. Well,
but you have gun control in
Canada.
Yeah.
But I can. From Israel, you know, we looked at the data, because Israel is actually, the guns are not like in the U.S. owned by people. And we see that, you know, when you control the guns in certain areas, the killing of women by guns is
In terms of the murder, suicide, did you look into the number and ages of children in the family?
In the dissertation, I did not tally it for this presentation. Not as many as you would expect. These men killed their wives or partners. Not as many killed their kids.
I don't mean about killing the kids, but were there kids in the family?
Of course, and many of the kids witnessed what took place. And you know, how do you fix that long term or short term?
And then I have one other question.
This was a comment for Dr. Hampton. One of the things, while you're right, there's no national database on homicide suicide. Mm-hmm. The National Violence Death Reporting System that CIN has, has 17 states and it just expanded to 32 states. While it's not national, what you may be able to do is in the future compare those 32 states with others because it does have coroner, medical examiner, law enforcement, and that's specific data. So it may be a possibility. One of the other things, I think Dr. Sharon Smith just published an article off of 17 states on corollary distance, which is, which is Dr. Pope said also. So maybe a future database that may be useful.
Sure, excellent. And it's up to 32 now, right. So that's not far from our total states. So half of your legislature about
there's also about an 18-month lag before the data comes out. But there is that time lag, which is one of the things that is a little problematic with NDRS.
Do you have one?
I just have a quick question about your discussion about male victims. Some of the, and this may qualitative, and I was just like looking at a quote. Some of those quotes look to me a little bit less like victimization than a realization of almost putting an emphasis on a reality. That suddenly a woman is working and you are not doing anything. You are lying around. You are depressed, and you're getting drunk every day. You're very depressed and not doing anything. And that sounds very hostile to a person who was used to being a martyr. And maybe they perceive it. I know that's wrong to say that.
There's a lot of quotes that didn't include about male victims, and the primary, and I was to do a little decision just on that, but there was a lot of men who did have legitimate victimization concerns who were being prostituted, men who were being taken advantage of for immigration papers, men who were verbally abused, legitimately verbally abused, men who were being controlled and manipulated by the women who probably were previous victims, and now it's in their hands, and probably
they're
kind of not a good thing. But there were definitely a lot of victimization happening. We had less male victims who came forward and wanted to talk with us, but the ones who did really did have some bad experiences and were
very interesting.
So I'll be sure to include more of those books.
Let's just thank our presenters one more time, and I'm sure they'll linger.